Joshua chapter 5. So it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart melted and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. At that time the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives for yourselves and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time. So Joshua made flint knives for himself and circumcised the sons of Israel at the hill of the foreskins. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way, after they had come out of Egypt. For all the people who came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the wilderness on the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness, till all the people who were men of war who came out of Egypt were consumed, because they did not obey the voice of the Lord, to whom the Lord swore that he would not show them the land which the Lord had sworn to their fathers, that he would give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. Then Joshua circumcised their sons, whom he raised up in their place, for they were uncircumcised, because they had not been circumcised on the way. So it was, when they had finished circumcising all the people, that they stayed in their places in the camp till they were healed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, this day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day. Verse 10. Now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. And they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. Then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land. And the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. 13. And it came to pass, when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? So he said, no, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped, and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? Then the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take your sandal off your foot, for the place where you stand is holy. And Joshua did so.
Thank you, David. Before we begin into commentary and discussions, do you have any questions? There's probably a few. I hope there'll be a few questions about this section. Yes, Gary.
The manna refers to manna. It says man in italics instead. Instead of manna, it says man.
Man?
Yeah. Yeah, it's too long. English version does, too. That's
weird. It means what you call it.
Yeah.
It's most close to.
Okay.
Which, yeah, the term manna, that's where it came from. That's what the word means. What's this?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're going to eat it, but we're calling it what's this. Like the word kangaroo. When it means right. I don't know.
And also have a second.
That's what the word means. And the Europeans showed up. Well, what's that? And the guy looked over and says, I don't know. And so they called it kangaroo. That's what they said. So it's very similar words to show up that way. Yes, Richard.
There's a secondary meaning of that word too in Hebrew, and that is that all there is?
Yeah, that'd be fairly appropriate.
Daniel,
yes.
Why didn't they circumcise their children, their boys?
in the wilderness.
When they were traveling. I mean, if that was...
It's a great question.
They were being disobedient, maybe?
Is that... We'll talk about that. That's a good question. Any other questions? Yes, Jeff.
The last part of this chapter touches on a question that is tossed around a lot these days. When the commander of the Lord's army confronts Joshua, Joshua asks him, you know, are you for us or for our enemies? And he says, neither. One of the arguments that's made today is the idea of the territorial God. God fights for Germany, or does he fight for Britain? Who does he fight for, and how do you know?
That is a great question. We'll be talking about that, and unfortunately, there is no definitive answer listed in the Bible for it, but it will be a discussion of today. I'm writing these down, by the way, so I don't forget to address them.
Can you at least write, you know, say it when you write it, so it's on tape.
Yeah. Any other questions? Something else catch your eye? Curiosities? I guess not. This may not be as difficult as I was expecting.
So when you start talking, then after...
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. First of all, your first question...
Well, wait, one more.
Oh, yes, Carmel.
Why did the commander have his sword drawn? Okay.
That is also part of Jeff's question, which is one of the things we'll be talking about today.
Okay. I mean, it's still, you know, if you're going to see something, it's like, okay, a guy standing there or a guy standing there with a big sword.
It catches your attention. The sword catches your attention really fast. If you were the person viewing it, your first thing, just as Balaam's...
Are you here for the enemies?
When Balaam, we discussed a couple of weeks ago, when the sword was drawn, what did the angel tell him about his drawn sword? Had your donkey not saved you, I would have killed you.
Yeah.
Had you came any closer. That was my job, to kill you if you came close enough to me. So the donkey saved him, and his sword was drawn, just as this angel's sword is drawn. Reason to think there's a reason it's drawn.
I mean, you only draw your sword when you're ready to use it.
When you're ready to use it, exactly. Which is why police pull their guns, because they're ready to use it in case something goes wrong. Well, this is no different. All right. If there are any other questions regarding that, I'm going to... Yes, come on.
What's the significance of doing the circumcision just before Passover?
Yes, that's actually very important. Yeah, we'll be talking about that as well, which is one. It ties into the other question.
And then one more. Meaning of what?
No.
Thanks.
Just thought I'd throw that in there, you know.
Dark Answers 1:1 and it is a revelation.
And when you're done, go back and do it again. All right. Okay, first of all, let's back up a little bit. There's circumcision. Now, first of all, they've just entered the land of Israel, right? The previous chapter, they just crossed under the Red Sea. That's back a ways. Crossed underneath the Jordan, under it, meaning because the water was towering above them. Not directly, but obviously upstream. So they just got what is symbolically called baptized. That's what the New Testament refers to the Red Sea. All the people who crossed it were baptized. And Jordan... They're referred to very similarly in Jewish commentaries, which is kind of funny because they don't really do baptism. But yeah. They note that there's some cleansingness going on. It's a cleansing process. I have a question for you. What happened when they crossed the Red Sea 40 years earlier? Well, they were all circumcised.
Right.
After they were baptized. Isn't that interesting? What happens here? They all go get baptized symbolically, and then they're circumcised. Interesting questions. I'm going to write some of these down because... yes, Richard.
Because they couldn't take the Passover in Egypt unless they were circumcised.
They couldn't take the Passover in Egypt.
Yeah. They're circumcised before they take the Passover in Egypt.
I don't believe so. I may have been misread that.
Egypt were circumcised. That wasn't the question. They were circumcised.
No, whether or not they were done after they crossed or before. I could have sworn maybe I misread that. It wouldn't be the first time. Well, I'll let you, if you don't mind, you look that up for me because I've got to keep going.
Exodus 12.
Exodus 12. We discussed the circumcision. Well, I'm going to let you go through it because I don't have the time to do that right now. You could be right. That may be correct. Well, in this case, though, in Jordan's case, they're circumcised afterward.
I don't know.
Before we go there, Kate, here's your question. I want to address where I was going with this for a moment. Baptism means something, and circumcision means something. What do they each mean?
Circumcision means covenant.
It's referred to a covenant.
Baptism is a ratification.
Well, the baptism represents covenant too, in a way, and your covenant with God.
Doesn't circumcision represent salvation?
I think it's outward appearance of a covenant. You know, a cleansing
there's 40
between you and God.
There's 40
as far as men. But also on a spiritual level of your heart.
The cutting away of the flesh. Yeah.
Yeah, cutting away the old.
If you're identifying being buried and then risen, you know, and buried with Christ and risen to live a new life, the identification with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And being brought back. There's a couple other symbols we're going to be discussing here that are associated with circumcision and Passover. They have there are actually quite a few similarities as far as their function. They also have a few differences. It happens to be a hot topic amongst many Messianic congregations today, the issue of circumcision, which is kind of appropriate to talk about it because it's interesting to talk about. And I believe actually the second session, which you'll be talking about, maybe not this week, maybe next week when Christ gets circumcised, but I don't recall what chapter it is off the top of my head. It might be just Luke. I don't remember. Anyway, I think it might be in Luke. Yeah, it might be the wrong book. I apologize. Yeah. Okay, circumcision. Very similar to baptism in many ways. Now, I could go through every verse, but I'm not going to go through all of them because there's quite a few verses scattered throughout the Bible regarding circumcision. Cutting away. So the actual word means actually is to cut. With mol or mule, however you wish to pronounce it. It's just a hacking apart, cutting something off. Why would you want to make a cut off? What are you trying to cut off?
Extra.
What is it
flesh.
That God wants you to cut off? Oh, it's flesh. Okay, so why does he want you to cut off flesh? What's the reason?
Well, why does he love you guys?
Sorry, why has God males to cut off a part of their flesh?
I mean, it is
blood.
Because it has to die.
I'm sorry, say a little.
Because it has to die. It
has to die?
The penalty of sin and death is... from sin.
Yeah, you could. Yes, yeah, you can go along with that route. There is a good enough support in the Bible regarding circumcision and what is cut off and what it actually means. Yes, David.
It definitely creates a separation, setting apart of mankind, those who have been, those who have not. It is a separation of, and we are a holy people set aside for His purpose. And it's a symbol of being set apart.
It's a symbol.
But you bleed.
Yes, there is blood. Tammy.
It's also somewhat of a hidden symbol because it's not something that anybody's just going to see. You know, for the most part, you take somebody's word for it. If you ask somebody, hey, have you been circumcised? They'll tell you yes or no, and you take their word for it. Right?
Yeah, I would expect to take your word for it.
And so, even though, yes, you know, it is a visible symbol, but it's only a visible symbol for, you know, at the time of the circumcision, it's a visible symbol for the parents that are there and the priests and whoever was allowed to witness it. It's a reminder, you know, every time the mother changes a diaper, but it's still somewhat hidden. It's not something that everybody sees. And I think somewhat the same thing with baptism. You know, I would ask you, have you been baptized?
You take their word for it.
Yes or no? and we move on. It's something I would have to take your word for unless I witnessed it myself.
Right.
But it's not something that would be blatantly obvious when you're just walking down the street. Hey, that guy's been circumcised, and that guy hasn't. It's just not that obvious.
That's true. It is. One person at a time, please.
A price of flesh?
Price of flesh. You can go that way. We're building on it. I agree with you. It is a price of flesh. We're slowly building our definition, which the Bible actually gives you a more complete definition of what it actually is when that part of you that's been cut off, what it symbolizes. But we're trying to give the concept here.
Is it something to do with offspring?
Offspring.
Mm-hmm. In the fact that it's like a first fruits type thing. That's like a removal so that it's consecrated to Yahweh.
That's
with the offspring.
That's a symbol I don't think I've explored enough to give you an answer yes or no to.
Doesn't it have to do with the heart? And it's an outward expression of an inward commitment from the heart. And obedience to God.
That's also true. Hold on. Okay. Yes.
I'm sort of on the track, Susan. I'm thinking of genitalia, generation, Genesis, beginning, firstborn. But I don't know where to put that. But it fits in.
But God had Moses...
circumcise his sons.
Well, and Moses had to be... God was ready to...
Abraham was circumcised, by the way.
But God was ready to strike down Moses.
Yes, that's true. And matter of fact, there are more than just... Moses, that God was ready to strike down. There are other men who believed in God, followed God, but God was still against them. Kate, you had your hand up?
You did.
Oh, I apologize. You, when you think about it, you can bring back. Yes, Gary.
But I mean, it's not only a sign, obviously, maybe it's a sign to the parents if the parents are obedient and have that done when a person's a child. So it's not, at that point, it's unless you're an adult who's not. It's never an issue of something you're doing. It's something your parents did. But it's an exposing, right? I mean, if you're not a child, then or maybe you are. You're a man. You're gonna have it done to your child. It's cutting away and saying that I'm exposing something that's vulnerable or that's tender and being willing to. I guess sacrifice in some way, saying that I'll do this even though it's uncomfortable, even though it's not what I want to do, because it's a test of obedience.
It is a test of obedience. I wrote down this board in additional words, which I'll be doing this throughout our discussion, regarding circumcision and baptism. Circumcision, the child does not remember and essentially is not its own witness. Mm-hmm. For all practical purposes, it has no clue it's been circumcised. As it grows up, it wouldn't know it was circumcised unless someone told it, sure. Oh yeah, you actually look different than Joe Blow over there.
Right.
Else they have no idea.
Yeah.
They grew up this way. They don't know any different.
Yeah, aren't we born?
Parents, however, know. Parents know the difference. They're the ones who are there. Baptism, as Tammy pointed out, is equally as personal as circumcision. The few people who know it happened are the ones who are there to witness. But the baptism has one subtle one. Actually, it might be a very major difference, not just subtle. You are your own witness as well. You know you were there. You recall what happened. So it's an important difference to make.
Unless you were baptized as a baby.
That's true. We're discussing biblical definition of baptism, which is an adult's baptism, not a child's. But you're right. There are many organizations that do baptize as children and infants, which again, they are no longer witnesses of their own baptism anymore. But that's another religious theological argument we're not going to get into.
So you could say circumcision is a dedication or a keeping of the covenant for the parents because they're supposed to do that, but it's also a dedication, a marking of a dedication for the kid. And like you said, baptism is you're making a choice to be set aside or set apart versus it was done on your behalf or the intention was that you'd be set apart.
That's a good way of working it. Now I'm going to stop our discussion and start talking to you about what this means. But unfortunately, it's going to take longer than I had hoped for. All right, definition of circumcision. In the Bible, it gives you one main definition prior to the Messiah and another two or three main definitions after the Messiah. Circumcision, prior to the Messiah is a symbol of covenant, an agreement. You are agreeing to go through with this with your God no matter what you do or where what life brings at you. Whatever God puts you through, it doesn't matter. You're going to continuously dedicate that. So that's an adult. I'm going to erase this baptism and move it down a little further because I'm going to give myself enough room. Before Messiah, I'm going to abbreviate some. I apologize. Circumcision is an agreement. It is a command by God for all males to be circumcised. I just marked my own tie. Shoot. Serves you right for not putting a capital marker, huh? It's an agreement for all males must go through. Now, what does circumcision mean, though? What does it mean to those males? It is nothing more. The actual physical circumcision is nothing more than a symbol. You, most of you males, are married. Most of you have given your wives rings. Does your wife having a ring or not having a ring on her finger make it married or not married to you? No, it does not. A ring is just a band of metal they happen to shove on a finger. If she happens to have no hands, guess what? She's not wearing a ring anymore. It's a symbol. How would it make you feel as a male if your wife said, I don't want to wear your ring? I'll still be married to you. I'll be a wife to you, but I don't want to wear your ring. What does it make you as a man feel?
You didn't get a big enough rock.
Place yourselves in the feet of God. Circumcision is an agreement. If a person who says, yes, I will follow you, chooses not to be circumcised, that is still their right to choose. Is it not? Yes. It's still her right to not wear that ring. Will she still be married to you? Yes. The ring doesn't make her do something or make her not do something. It is her will or her spirit that chooses to do so. How does it make you as a man feel, though?
It's a form of rejection.
It is. Now, do you reject her? No.
No, but it causes pain.
It causes a little bit of pain. Not an emotional, horrible, oh no, I'm going to go abandon my life kind of thing, but it hurts a little bit. It hurts a little.
Well, you just think, why wouldn't you?
Right, why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you wonder?
Now, if God said the same thing to man, here's a circumcision of our agreement. This is a contract. This is a mark. Our contract. This is what he did to Abraham, by the way. I'm paraphrasing. This is a contract of our agreement together. And Abraham said, you know, I don't really feel like it. I'll do whatever you want, God, but I won't do that. God is not going to say, well, Abraham, he might. I would hope. God would not say, Abraham, be off with you. He would be hurt. But it's a symbol. It's a symbol of an agreement. Hence, I wrote down circ equals agreement. That is the part of the symbol. Who knows about this agreement? Parents do, or generally today, parents do. Abraham's time, of course he knew. He was an old man when it happened. But parents today know about this agreement. The child, infant, does not until it is raised in this agreement. It's agreement. Down. It's agreement to follow and grow within God's laws. I seem to have lost the cap to this marker. I don't know what I did with it.
Dan, I disagree with that. I think very early on, boys find out whether they are or not, and they very early on, every time they see themselves, they know and are aware that the circumcision is there. And I think it's just like, see, it's a reminder.
But that's only if the people...
I'm preoccupied here.
If everybody is, then you're not...
You wouldn't know about it. Yeah, you wouldn't know about it.
But if your parents had it done...
They tell you. No, I realize your argument is going to play a major factor here as the child grows.
Right.
Right now we're discussing what circumcision is, which is what's defined in the Bible. 8 days old, the child has no clue.
As a baby.
I mean, even the child up to 2 years old most likely has no clue. 3, 4, 5, okay, they're starting, they might get an idea, your parents may understand it and discuss it to you, and yeah, 7 years old, they're going to follow, oh, okay, this means something. But as a child, they don't. Circumcision as an adult is something different. We're not discussing this as an adult right now. That's an agreement to follow God. Now, what's baptism? What's baptism?
Submersion.
Agreement. It's also agreement, isn't it? It's an agreement.
Yeah. Covenant.
Yes, David.
It's usually one of your first acts of obedience as a new believer.
Which, great parallel. What's circumcision? One of your first acts of obedience as a child following God. These are very similar. I'm trying to bring out their similarities because they're going to start playing each other or with each other in the New Testament. There are different agreements that showed up, or disagreements, sorry, in the New Testament regarding circumcision. Some said yes, some said no to Gentiles being circumcised. They all had disagreements. Were they all right or wrong? Well, I'm not going to argue that. But they had a lot of similarities to definitions of circumcision, what it means, and similarities to baptism and what it means. Yes, Kate, I apologize, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just thinking, well, you had said before that it's, you know, not necessarily your will when it's done, but it's a marking of this covenant is to go through my child, my son,
right.
And, carry on through his family as well. But it is your first submission to God.
Your first follow to God.
It's not necessarily yours.
Uh-huh. This is another unique thing about circumcision in biblical definition. When is the child named? The child has an identity
on the eighth day.
Prior to that, girls set aside, we're talking about males. Prior to that, it has no identity. It's just a child. Why does it not? Well, who knows what happened? A child could die. Various things could happen. The child could may never grow up. Various things can happen to an infant. But it's named on that day. When you're baptized, what do you feel?
Born again.
Born again, don't you? You have an identity. You are identifying exactly with the Messiah. It's the same thing. I'm going to stop writing because this thing's drying out horribly. I apologize. I'll buy a new marker later. So circumcision has its reasons. It's very similar to baptism's reasons. They're both markings. They're personal, very internal, as Tam points out. You take someone's word for it. It's an internal marking. It's an identifier. And just as I pointed out earlier, how does God feel about it? It's an agreement with you and him. It's an agreement. How does he feel? We're not talking about what his law says. How does he feel? He has the same emotions that we do. He has the same thoughts and feelings we do. He created them inside of us. So he's going to feel the same way. He may act differently, but he feels the same way.
You would think he would be pleased because you're taking on the burden of, or you're taking on
His identity. You are identifying with him,
right,
as being part of him. Baptism has very same, or almost identical reasons and parallels, except instead of just God, it's actually the Messiah in particular. Baptism is an adult's choice. Biblical baptism, I should clarify that. It's an adult's choice. Circumcision can be either. It can be adult or child. It doesn't make any difference. It's generational. It's to be passed on. It's an identity that you will always identify with God as your walk with him progresses.
It's an intention.
They're both very similar. Now, why weren't the children of Israel baptized? Getting confused. Why were the children of Israel circumcised before in the 40 years while they were wandering the wilderness? Yes, Kate.
Well, because they were taking on a new covenant with God. And then all of them died off, basically. And so I was reading this and I was thinking, so that what it was is that they couldn't go into the promised land without saying, we are under this covenant and we accept your covenant as, you know, a will for us. And so is that why he was standing there with a sword because they're not allowed to go in without being taken on that covenant?
That's a good theory. Hold on a minute.
Himself.
There's a second part to the covenant that God made with Abraham. It's called the Promised Land. Then there's part one, which is, all right, Abraham, you're going to live this way, and you're going to dedicate your children to follow me for the next 400 years as they go through Egypt and they come out of it for 40 years wandering, in order to get this reward. And what's the reward?
The promised land.
That was the reward.
Second section.
Promised land agreement. Throughout the story of when Moses was around talking to them, talking to the people of Israel as they were going through their 40 years of wilderness, what was he telling them? What were the words that came out of his mouth more often than almost every other word there ever was? When you enter, well, that's true too. Stop happened a lot. When you enter the promised land, you shall do X, Y, Z. That's what he said all the time. What in particular did he say regarding the moment they entered the promised land? We talked about this last week. This was the take the rocks out of the river, bring them open into the where you stay that night. The process of going through the storyline, which went through last time. I'm not going to go through it again today. You can look online if those of you who weren't sure. That's one of the first things he did. But when you enter the promised land, what did he say about children and circumcision? Every male, 8 days old, will be circumcised. Shabbat, high day, or not, they'll be circumcised. Doesn't matter what day of the week it is, they'll be circumcised. 8 days. When you enter the promised land, why didn't it apply before?
They weren't under a covenant at that point.
Yeah, they broke Abraham's covenant.
Uh-huh.
They broke the first part of it. That's why they were wasting away for 40 years. They wouldn't accept part two, hence part one got broken. So circumcision didn't apply. It didn't matter. They have to complete Abraham's promise before they can sit there and move into part two. If you don't complete part one, well, you don't get to move on. People of Israel opted not to complete part one by saying, this land's too much, let's go back to Egypt. You now rejected the promise that Abraham said, yes, God, all my descendants will follow you in order to get this. Now he has a group of descendants who chose not to follow. Circumcision was broken. A lot of other rules were broken too, hence the 40 years in the wilderness.
But to be clear, that when they broke it, and there's nothing in there that says, as a group, they decided, well, let's not circumcise anymore. It's just, it represents an attitude of the people, a large portion of the people stopped doing that.
It represents, hold on a second, it represents, as I mentioned earlier, your wife taking off her ring. It's a symbol. It's just a symbol. That's all it means. It's just a symbol. It doesn't mean anything of it of itself. Yes, Richard.
Think about your favorite point that I think it is. It's the older generation that didn't circumcise their kids. It's not the kids.
Right.
It wasn't their choice. They were there. They didn't have a choice in the matter.
Well, okay.
No, listen.
Hold on.
Now,
older generation, 20 years and under.
40.
20 years and under,
right.
We're all defined as children.
Correct.
So anybody from 20 and up are the older generation, the men of war.
Right.
You can't go to war unless you're 20 years or older, unlike today's military. But yes, you're right.
Their parents are the ones who rejected
the
covenant.
Parents are the ones who were saying,
so they did not, when they rejected the covenant, they did not circumcise their children. And those children are these adults here.
Right.
That's a great, great synopsis.
Right.
That makes logical sense. But all of you followed that?
Now
thank you for putting that
decision.
Out. They got to make their choices.
Yeah.
Just like we make our choices in baptism, they have to make their choice in circumcision. What would happen if any of them said no? What did Moses say? Any of you who are not circumcised are cut off of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say no, you're allowed to. You're allowed to say no. As a result, you don't get the promise that God made to Abraham. That's okay. You can choose to be a Gentile. That's fine. Enjoy your life, but go away.
Kind
of like, we don't need you anymore. You're of no value to us. Joshua was circumcised, right? He was circumcised long before this. He's an old man here. Caleb was circumcised. He was an old man too at this point in time. So there are actually a few people there who are circumcised. They're older. And there were a few who, as Richard pointed out, 20 and under at the time 40 years earlier, most, if not all those males, most likely were circumcised as well because they were born in Egypt. Many of them born after that crossing the Red Sea were not circumcised. So this is an agreement that they all have to make. As adults, not as children. That's a huge difference. It's a harder decision to make as an adult because it hurts a whole lot more and you remember it. It's a bigger deal. This matters. Or I sure want to go through this. Baptism, does it hurt?
No.
No, not at all. So why would God have us be baptized, correction, have us, have the children of Israel be baptized through the Jordan and be circumcised? Now, baptism in New Testament definition is washing away of sins, washing away of your old person, your old man. What is foreskins in the Old Testament? Your dead body. You're getting rid of your dead body, the part that is dead of you, your dead flesh, the part you don't want. They're actually very similar. One would say they're almost identical. One is a child, but one is as an adult. Both of them accomplish, in theory, the same thing.
A cleansing.
It is a cleansing. It's a cleansing of sins. What did God tell them in this section which we read regarding why? Why should they be circumcised? To roll away the reproach of Egypt. What does that mean? What does it mean? What does it mean to roll away the reproach of Egypt?
All the things that they gathered and absorbed and took on that were not from God, being in Egypt around the Egyptian people, coming away out of Egypt now, and that was like the final, if you will, cutoff of all the past and stepping into the new. The promise, the fulfillment.
Exactly. Which baptism is almost identical. Almost identical.
The stigma of Egypt.
The stigma. The leftover stuff is still there. These people already accepted God.
Right.
This generation already accepted Him. They already accepted they are children of God. But there's something that's still there, which had to be cut away. It's Jeff.
Well, she had kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, but the idea of the original covenant under Abraham, that that his children would become numerous and would inhabit the land, by the generation before them keep pining after Egypt and wanting to go back to Egypt every other moment, they were turning their back upon that covenant.
Exactly.
That agreement. They were wanting to go back, and this new generation now is actually going forward with the fulfillment of this promise that God made with Abraham.
That's an exact, perfect statement. Perfect way of saying it. What's the one thing this generation still had with them, though? We read this actually a couple of weeks ago regarding the Book of Numbers. What did they say? This is a whole new generation. This is the moment which Moses gets angry and strikes the rock and tells people, you rebellious people.
Murmuring.
What did they say? We'd be better off going back to Egypt. This new generation, who weren't even, well, a few of them, weren't even around with Egypt. They still had that pull. They still had that one thing that was still there. This was once better.
From the parents going on.
These people.
Yeah. It continued on. What if you say that the blessings to the 1,000 generations, cursing the 3rd and 4th generation, it carries on. The reproach, the stuff that was left over, the stuff that God detests, now he was still amongst them. He didn't say, I will not dwell among you until this is gone. He still dwelled among them, but that reproach was still there. It's symbolic. But circumcision has its reasons, just as baptism has its reasons. I realize I'm a little over time. Yes, David.
It's another one of those things where they were picking up on the values of their parents.
Yeah.
Those are the things that are caught, not necessarily taught. Mm-hmm. But the things that are caught transcend through because they're there, not necessarily spoken, but they're there. And that's what they were experiencing, their parents' values that were caught. Just being there with them, hearing the complaining and the remembrances of the past.
They would have grown up with it.
They grew up with that, not knowing it, but hearing it. It transcended through them, and now the parents are gone. Basically, that still is a part of them.
Whether they understood it or not, it was still there. Had to be wiped away. Now, like I mentioned before, foreskin and definition is part of what is old and dead and needs to be wiped away. The other definition of Old Testament foreskin is sin. Uncleanness. Something that is dirty. They're all synonymous. As you've read in the past, and you'll reread this, we go through in the prophets further on, you run across people who are circumcised and some who are not. They both have the characteristic traits. Those who are circumcised detest those who are not circumcised. Why? Because they're dirty. What's so dirty about it? Well, wait a minute here. Let's think about that. Those of us who are baptized and accept the Messiah, accept God in our lives, look upon those who have rejected God completely as unclean. You know, I don't want to hang around you. Why? Because your uncleanness is going to contaminate me. As we all say, all know, good does not corrupt evil. Evil corrupts good. All right, we know that. It's true. It's an absolute truth. It always has been that way and always will be. Because even though the evil may improve, it's still never good. Mm-hmm. It's still evil.
Right.
Good, anything shy of good is evil. Mm-hmm. So we know that that's the case. We wouldn't associate with someone who has rejected God because why? It's going to rub off on us too. We're no different. We don't associate that close to these. Now we have coworkers and various other things. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people who you associate with. They are you and you are them. Your friends, your buddies, your at oneness, your best friends, the ones who are always there for you, who can call upon your support. Intimate, that's a great word for it. Thank you. Those are who we're talking about here. Circumcision has its reasons, just as baptism does. I hope I explained a little bit as to why the circumcision was actually requested, what the reasons for, and why they did not do it in the wilderness, and why they have to do it in the promised land, even though they were, quote, symbolically baptized.
Okay, let's get to the sword.
Sword. All right, we got to move on here. And Commander of the Lord's Army, for us or against us? No. Am I for you or against you? No. I am neither for you nor am I against you. Why? Because I'm just here.
Right.
I'm for God.
I have a job to do. Yes, David.
The thing that also came to me was he is obviously a captain of the Lord, representing the Lord. If he was for or against, he could not love all. He could not forgive all, and he is not willing that all that any should perish. Mm-hmm. So for him to be against one and not another, and he is no respecter of persons, so therefore he can't be for or against, but he protects those and is with those that are with him because they're on his side. But at the same time, he is for all to come to repentance.
Okay, but
hold on, I'm going to address your point. That is a great point. It is true. If he was a for or against someone or something, then the opposite of that person or thing, he has to be against it. An angel is not to make that distinction. That's God's choice. God makes that distinction. And just in the case of Balaam. Balaam, you can be there. I don't like this fact that you're there. But you can be there and you can go out there and because this Balak wanted you to curse them. Fine. You cannot curse what I, God, have blessed. Why? Because you're not allowed to. You do, I'll kill you. You can't go against me. I'm the one who dictates whether or not these people are blessed or cursed. Not you, Balaam. I am. Same philosophy. This angel, he doesn't get to say, you know what, I like you guys better. But keep in mind, where you're standing is holy. Why did he say that? Because it doesn't belong to you. That's why he said it. That's a key. You go to a guest's house. Is the house yours? No, you're a guest. The land, the promised land does not belong to Joseph. Sorry, Joseph.
Joshua,
I apologize. Joshua doesn't belong to him. He has to conquer it over time. It actually is God's land. God said, this is my territory. I am making this land spew out its current occupants. I'm allowing you to be in it. It's actually God's land. Hold on, I had two hands up. I think Carmel's was up first. Yes.
So could Joshua have been asking this spirit being, are you from God or are you from Satan? I mean, God would send his angels. I mean, there are times when the angels were supporting Israel, and there were times when they were there destroyed because of what they had done. So an angel can have many different tasks for the moment. It doesn't mean, you know, along with what David said, it doesn't mean I'm always going to be for you or always for here. I have a task to do. But could Joshua have been asking this spirit, are you here, you know?
Are you going to whack us or not?
Well, are you here? Do you represent God or do you represent evil? I mean, could that have been?
If that was the case, which it would have to require a little different wording than what he actually used, I don't think Joshua knew this was an angel yet. And if he did know it was an angel, he probably would have worried, are you for God or something along those lines? And the angel probably would not have said no. He probably would have said, I am, to his question, are you this or that? He said, no, I'm neither. Mm-hmm. Yes, Ellie.
I don't think Joshua knew that he was an angel. He thought he was somebody, and he says, whose army are you for?
Right.
But
the question is asked is different. Go ahead.
Okay, but the true that as the commander of the army, he doesn't get to make a choice, because God, when Jehoshaphat was making friends with Ahab, trying to be peaceable, God said, why are you making friends with people who hate me? Don't make friends with I don't like that guy. You don't make friends with that guy. So God does make a division. I like these people, but don't mess with those people, because
right.
I like
them. Right.
But I can see where the commander can't make that call.
Right. It's not his job to make the call. Now, who is this commander?
It's probably
an angel. Actually, the book of Exodus gives you more details as to why he's even there. Back in the book of Exodus, chapter 32, 33. God told something to Moses. You don't have to turn there. You can if you wish. It doesn't make any difference. God told something to Moses. He said, you know what? This is the golden calf story, right? Just following it. You people are gross. I'm paraphrasing. I don't want to be around you. Okay? I'm going to send my angel to lead you.
Yeah.
And Moses said, no! I apologize on behalf of all these people, but please call them your people and stay with us. And God's response was, well, you know, you found favor in my sight. I like you, Moses. And because I'm a very forgiving God, I will agree to stay. God didn't make the agreement with Joshua. He made it with Moses to stay. When Moses is dead, God doesn't need to stay anymore. These people are no less flesh and blood than they were 40 years earlier. They're still flesh and blood. Well, Joshua, in his story, when he shows up, this angel is finally now sent. He's not to decide who is good and who is bad. His job is to do his job, to lead, to direct, as God originally planned back in Exodus. It was 40 years earlier. By the way, but no, this is like only a month and a half or so after Moses is dead. This guy is now showing up on the scene. Why was his sword drawn? This is a great question. It's a hard one to answer, but it's a great question.
He's a warrior with the word.
Yes, he is.
He's got to fight. The word is Jesus. Symbolic.
Let's go back to parallels. Now, I mentioned earlier Balaam. The spirit, the angels with him, the sword was drawn. What did it mean to Balaam? It was going to kill him if he got too close. Now, did the angel kill him as Balaam passed? No, he actually allowed Balaam to walk around him. Now, if I'm a human being, if I have a 20-foot span and somebody chooses to walk around me because a donkey has directed them, there's nothing stopping me from taking a step closer to them and then killing them. But the angel didn't. Well, this angel didn't take any steps at all, just like the other one didn't. Sword was drawn. What does it mean? It's a tough one to answer. Only one commentary I have found mentioned anything about the fact his sword was drawn. The rest of them ignored it. They pretend like it didn't happen. In my opinion, they're pretending like it didn't happen because they don't have an answer for it. My issue is sword drawn. Think of time of year. It's Passover time. All these people who were originally unclean, they have rules to be kept. And this is God's territory. If you don't follow these rules, just as Balaam, if you don't follow these rules, angel has authorization to get rid of you. You are no longer, you are no more acceptable than the current occupants. That was the only commentary I found that mentioned anything regarding his sword being drawn. Because swords drawn means battle, means war.
Yeah, and
I gotta
standing,
stop, but go ahead.
He was standing between
Joshua and Jericho.
Joshua and Jericho.
Yes, his
so
first
was that
direction.
The way, maybe it was to keep them from
going back.
Moving towards Jericho until God was ready, because God had a plan about Jericho.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I doubt that. At this point in time, the reason I doubt that, which it's a good point, but keep in mind I mentioned earlier how many, all the people that were circumcised, there's absolutely, since there's no fighting males, they're all down.
Yeah.
Who's left? Well, there's a very few small number. Joshua's one of them. He's probably standing guard because, who knows, these Canaanite people, which though the chapter points out they're all petrified, could be attacking and wiping them all out.
No, but that's, it says no, they stayed in Gilgal until they were healed.
Right. This is
towards Jericho.
Don't think chronologically.
No.
Gilgal is the plains of Jericho. You can see, well, if you have really good eyes, from where they're at in Gilgal to where Jericho's at.
Okay.
Now, it's not like a bow shot kind of see, but you could get on top of a hill, you can look down, yes, you can see it. It's within eye shot distance. He's in the same area. They never left Gilgal. They're all still preoccupied. Don't think chronologically necessarily, because the Bible is not always written that way. We already found out earlier there are many things in the book of Numbers that's actually happened in the book of Joshua, but they're recorded in the book of Numbers much earlier, supposedly, but it's not. Many people compiled these things together. God made all the stories happen, but people put them in their order that they're put in. So, in Joshua's story, there's no evidence that says he was, and this was after they were all healed, and he showed up this angel. One could argue this is right in the middle of it, so he's scared. He has no defenses. He doesn't know who this guy is. He's scared. Hence the question, are you for us or against us? Do I have to fight you? And he says, no, I'm not for you, against you. No, you don't have to worry about me. This is who I am. This land does not belong to you. I've got to stop. Yes, Ellie.
Well, he says, what does God have to say to me? And he says, take off your sandals because your foot's on holy ground. Was the reason the angel was there to explain and describe what we are going to do in Jericho and how we're going to do it? Because this is the beginning of Joshua walking into a new scenario. Because why is he taking,
so,
why is this holy ground now? This wasn't holy ground 15 minutes ago. This was ground running around doing whatever. Now all at once
so,
it's holy
okay.
ground.
So your question is whether or not this angel actually stuck around and told him the story of what he's going to be doing
well,
in Jericho? Is that your comment?
Or if not, why all at once is this holy ground? Why all at once the angel, Joshua, you're in holy ground?
Because you know.
Because you know what?
Because you know it's holy ground. There's a difference between somebody knows and someone doesn't know.
The first response that Joshua did was what?
Fell asleep. Well, after he found out, yes.
No, worship. Right there. Inside the commander of Yahweh. Immediately went down the earth.
Yes.
And then he says, take off your shoes, for the where you stand is now holy. So Joshua did that purity of cause the feet, got back up again, and it's where you stand.
You can argue that. I don't know necessarily, because the term stand can be used both physically as well as be, where you happen to be.
Okay.
It can be used both ways. We all know that. So that's possible. Yes, he does submit. He submits to this angel. He worships the angel. Does the angel say, don't worship me?
No.
No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. Uh-oh.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Uh-oh.
I'm going to leave with that. We got to stop.
And the angel also didn't say, don't be afraid. Usually angels say, don't be afraid.
That's what Joshua.